Here is part two of our summer podcast with Nathaniel Rogers from The Film Experience, Joe Reed from Low Resolution, and Nick from Nick's Flick Picks.
My line that sticks in my head that I just love, in a way it just made the movie for me, was, I think we should be best friends in Magic Mike.
Oh, yeah.
There's just something so open and believable about that moment, and I was sort of floored that Alex Pettifer had that performance in him.
Yeah. They used him really, really well. They sort of used...
He was just so not trying to be an actor in it, in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was just amazing.
Yeah. They're like, well, this is this kid who doesn't have a ton of experience, so we'll use that. And it's also this kid who has a really unlikable face. And I'm going to use that, too. And I thought that was really smart, where all of a sudden, by the end, he's just like, God, that fucking punk kid. And it's just like, well, of course, with a face like that, of course he would just...
I think mine are all spring, because I just saw them, so I'm cheating again.
That's okay.
But, almost everything that Jonah Hill or Channing Tatum says in 21 Jump Street.
Yes.
Absolutely anything that Catherine Hahn or Michaela Watkins says in Wanderlust, like when they're having the honesty circle and before Jennifer Aniston has even started speaking and Catherine Hahn says, like, I'm not going to let your lies just slip all over me. You know?
I love, as you probably know, I love her so, so, so much. Catherine Hahn. And she single-handedly made that James L. Brooks movie livable for me, the one with Reese Witherspoon.
Wasn't she the bitchy ex-girlfriend and Idiot Brother?
Yes, the hippie one.
Yeah.
She was also in Revolutionary Road in a very, non-comedic role.
Yeah, no, she's good. She's a good actress.
She's fantastic. And also, Michaela Watkins, thank you for bringing her up, because she was
great. Oh, my God.
Did you stay till after the credits when she gets her own Real Housewives of Atlanta opening
did.
Credit job?
Yes.
Made
the whole thing was just amazing.
Yeah.
She's incredible.
So, archery was big this year. So, Princess Marita, Katniss, or Hawkeye?
Hawkeye. Who's Hawkeye? I'm sorry.
Oh, is Jeremy Renner in the Avengers.
Okay.
Yeah.
None of the above.
Well, you haven't seen Brave yet, correct?
I have not seen Brave or the Avengers, and I think The Hunger Games is just really bad. So, I'm going to default.
I actually thought Jennifer Lawrence was really good in The Hunger Games, and I thought she was sort of everything she needed to be in that. I thought she sort of lived up to all of these expectations that everybody had about this character that everybody loved from the books, and I thought she did a really good job. And I thought Jeremy Renner was fine in The Avengers, although it was sort of funny when you look at it afterwards and being like sort of the big sort of outsized presence of all these superheroes. And even Scarlett Johansson sort of goes above and beyond what we thought she was going to do. And it was just like, there's Jeremy Renner. He's up on top of the Chrysler Building again. He's waiting to shoot that arrow. One of these days he's going to do it. He's going to work his way up to it. Like, he's going to get to shoot that arrow.
I have to say, Hawkeye was a major disappointment to me in the Avengers, because I love Jeremy Renner. And, you know, at the beginning when, Tom Hiddleston, shoves that long stick into his chest.
Why do I remember that?
And you know how it makes his eyes go all funky, and of course he's like sucking out his like willpower or whatever. I don't even know. I don't understand what the...
We've all been there, guys.
And it was almost like I thought it was really unfortunate, because it was almost like Tom Hiddleston was sucking all the charisma out of Jeremy Renner too.
Well, it was definitely a move narratively to sideline him for much of the movie, which I thought, sucks for Jeremy Renner, honestly, but like... probably was good for the story, in that it took this character that nobody had any investment in early on, sort of set him to the side, like, we're going to deal with the characters you know and you give a shit about right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also, later on, when he re-entered the story, it was like, well, now you have a reason to be. Now you have a revenge motive, and now you have sort of gone through all this stuff where, like, Scarlett Johansson fought to save you.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought narratively it all worked. You know, if you're looking at it from, I want to see Jeremy Renner do things. Probably not. Although, I guess the hope is that you're taking it on faith that in future movies down the line, it'll be able to do something.
Yeah. He'll be too busy with his Bourne legacy.
All of his movies, all of his many, many franchises.
Yes. What did you really hate this summer?
Snow White
and the
Huntsman.
I've been relentlessly positive this whole conversation, so I don't really want to to the negative.
I really, really hated To Rome with Love.
Oh, I didn't see it.
And you dodged a bullet.
What was so... What specifically was so bad about it?
I just thought it was just... And I know this is the criticism people have about Woody Allen, and I resisted it for so long. It's just so fucking lazy.
Yeah. Well, what was that one with Larry David in the lead role?
Oh,
I thought that was about the laziest that Woody Allen had gotten in a while.
It's just like, it wasn't funny. It didn't... The various storylines didn't connect in any interesting ways, and it was just like it's such a waste of all these like potentially like good actors, and I don't know, I just,
yeah,
I should have learned by now, but
I fell asleep in the middle of Snow White and the Huntsman, although to be fair to that movie, I was kind of drunk at the time. it was one of those
but
things where
a,
I sort of
it is like glacially
It was
thing in some ways.
It
yeah.
was, and I sort of it, I did that thing where you snore yourself awake.
Oh no!
It was really embarrassing. It was really embarrassing. But like the adrenaline of that moment of being that embarrassed, like kept me awake throughout the rest of it. So that was cool.
That is the real kicker of those moments. Yeah, you
it
never
is.
Fall asleep again. Yeah,
right. Exactly. And I thought Charlene was Charlize.
Charlize.
You know,
Charlene,
women
Charlene,
the
Charlene Tilton is
Charlene Tilton
the
was
evil
great.
Queen Snow White.
Oh my god. No, she you know, did her thing. I was sort of expecting a little bit more fun out of it. I sort of thought it was the same kind of scene over and over and over again. I thought the trailer sort of gave you what you were going to get out of that.
Yeah.
And then the other one I really didn't care for was Cosmopolis, but I can see why other people are really, really digging it. I just thought it was just so gratingly obvious with its metaphors and making sure that you got it. Like, do you get it? Do you get that the limousine is a coffin? Because we'll show you an actual coffin to, like, run right alongside it just to make sure you got it. But I thought some of the acting in that was fine. So I thought generally it was a really good
high praise, Joe. Some of the acting was fine.
It was. Like... I thought Pattinson was surprisingly, like, I was expecting him to kind of deep six the thing. I thought he held his own pretty well.
Yeah.
And like I said, I really like Samantha Morn.
I like David Cronenberg a lot, but I haven't loved him in a while, but I thought this was just deadly. And I like the book, and I'm all for the experiment of, like, the limited set movie and the, because there's even more happens in the car in the movie than does in the book. Which is weird, since you usually think of movies as kind of unpacking the action other places, and they
right.
actually squash a lot into this car. But
yeah,
and like it seemed, like even in the first few scenes, like there was like this radical disconnect between the background of what you're seeing, just like sort of 50s driving scene style. Like it just
yeah.
it wasn't even convincing at all, which really seemed to change over the course of the movie in a way that seemed like it was probably intentional. But mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it was a total fusillade of concepts and not a completely undigested chunks of just prose that didn't feel illuminating of absolutely anything. I haven't read anything about it that strikes me as reviewing the movie and not what the movie might want to say to us today.
Or not the
that
book.
That makes
not
it
the
seem
book.
Great. Yeah, yeah.
I loved Don DeLillo, so but I had a hard time deciding what the movie was, how the movie was even doing anything other than delivering it in a, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. In a really not ideal medium. The other one, I guess I've mentioned them all before, but I would say Compliance and Cosmopolis and Dark Knight Rises also just seemed like it struck me as lovely bonesy in the like, oh, the person who made this was really unhappy while they were forced through this thing that has gotten way out of the hand of what they thought this was going to be for them. Like, they just haven't seen that interested. Like, I don't get the sass from Christian Bale and Christopher Nolan that they really hoped they were locking into like a 3-film cycle that was going to dominate the world when they started all this. And it seemed like they had to make a third movie, but it was so profoundly joyless, and not just because it's about a grim scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And it even seemed to, for me...
Well,
and I know
you really loved The Dark Knight, too.
I liked The Dark Knight a lot, yeah. And I didn't love Batman Begins, but I liked it. Like, you know, I'm into the project. I've been all over the map with his other movies, but I thought Anne Hathaway was fine, but I didn't sense a transformation there, and I almost felt a, like, Oscar show repeat of having to be super sassy and slinky because everything else in the movie was so goddamn heavy and scattered, and six of the same scenes are trying to get out of the damn hole while the Egyptians chant at you. Like, it was just, it seemed, I couldn't get into it at all. And it also seemed like not much subtler than Cosmopolis about wanting to say something, but then with the big awful chaser of what everybody has talked about the politics of the movie.
Well, the
what
politics
saying,
are still so
do.
Muddled. It's so... Like, yeah. I like the movie. I was very... I think satisfied was the word that I used when I walked out. I thought it was a very satisfying conclusion to such a big trilogy that it felt big in a way that a lot of superhero movies don't to me. Mm-hmm. The Avengers also felt sufficiently big. A completely different universe in terms of, you know, sort of dialogue and you know, things being sort of snappy and sparkling and... there was a lot that I didn't love about Dark Knight Rises, but I thought the politics being so muddy and so the fact that we're being asked to sort of cheer the NYPD sort of marching in on, you know, to save the day from Occupy Wall Street. Like I not to make it that blunt, but like that's what it's, you know, that was the bluntness of what was on the screen.
Yeah,
and like that's the moment that everything is going to come into clear focus. Like, really, that's the one you're deciding on. And I thought Bane was a really, really weak spot. I thought actually Anne Hathaway as Catwoman was everything. I thought she was really great. And I sort of, and maybe that was me sort of latching on to that one sort of bright spot of humor in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm never going to like Christian Bale as Batman. So that's sort of like, I almost felt like going into this movie, I already knew that. So I didn't even consider that as part of my reaction to the movie. So I thought it was okay. I thought it was, you know, decidedly mixed, but I thought the good parts, I was pretty satisfied by.
I love to do mashups in my head, just the way my brain works with movies.
Right.
So what two movie characters would you like to have introduced and why?
All right. I don't want to spoil... Well, I was going to say, I don't want to spoil the end of For a Good Time Call, although it's not like there's a twist or anything like that. But basically, the way things end up in For a Good Time Call, the character played by Lauren Miller ends up in a way that's not, it's refreshingly, like, she's left at refreshingly loose ends in terms of her professional prospects and her romantic prospects, and it's all very, like, didn't really feel the need to, like, shove her into, like, an ending, really. It was sort of a continuation, which I thought was very nice. And that whole movie is about this, she sort of breaks out of her shell, and she starts, you know, this phone sex line business with Ari Grainer, and she really sort of finds freedom in something pretty vulgar. So I thought, well, who better to set her up with than a guy who, at the end of his movie, is saddled with a humorless, sex-negative frump, played by Cody Horn. So I've obviously, I'm talking about Channing Tatum and Magic Mike. Because I so love Lauren Miller, why wouldn't I want her with somebody as wonderful as Mike from Magic Mike?
I want to send Kevonjane Wallace on the road with Ted, I think, a friend, and he's sassy and profane and fun, and she seems ready to have a lot to say. So yeah, I'd pair them up.
They're gonna host the Oscars, right?
I hope so.
I don't know if you guys saw the documentary Marina Abramović, The Artist of Present.
No, nope. I haven't. I missed it.
That's who I thought of when I was writing up this little like report card of questions.
Uh-huh.
And her, like, the conceit of her The Artist is Present piece and retrospective is that, you know, the big centerpiece of it is that she sits in a room and stares at at you, you know, yes. The audience. So like you come in and sit across from her and she stares at you and she does this for months on end.
You have a moment.
Yeah. And
it lasts a lifetime.
And it's actually,
some people wait a lifetime for a moment sitting across from Maria Abramovich.
That's right. I feel like an American Idol song coming on.
Yeah. I'm with you.
No, and it's actually like a really interesting documentary, and the concept, like the performance art of it, is very interesting in the way people project onto other people, and the idea of like intimacy through, you know, forcing yourself to really look at someone.
Yeah.
And so I thought I would just have to see her sit across the table from the Evil Queen in Snow White and the Huntsman. One of the things that was both working for that movie and against it is that she was putting so much into that performance.
Yeah.
And the movie just had no ways to support anything that she was trying to do. So in a way, she was almost like too heavy for the movie.
Right. Are we talking about Rock of Ages right now? I'm sorry. I forgot what movie we're talking about.
Oh, yeah, that would be Tom Cruise as well in Rock of Ages. But anyway, and the most fascinating beat in Snow White to me is when her brother is staring at her, and she's talking to the magic mirror, but you see it from his point of view, and she's actually by herself.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this shot, and so then you're for one moment there's some sort of ambiguity about whether there's magic involved there or whether she is just like this paranoia and like her only conversations are with herself type of thing. So anyway, I thought that would be fascinating to see her have to the forced intimacy with a woman who is allowing herself to age and doesn't care what she looks like when she stares at people.
Get your asses down to MoMA, people, because Charlize Theron and Maria Brown.
I'm sorry, was that way too pretentious an answer? It just popped into my head and I was just like, oh my God.
This is why we love your head.
So that's the summer. So overall, yay, nay on the summer?
I thought it was a really good summer. I thought, looking at my list now from what I was at this point last year, there's so much more stuff that I really, really loved. And even just stuff that fits into that level between, like, didn't quite love, but also really, really, you know, enjoyed myself while I was at. There's, you know, a really good batting average for this summer, even when you get into things like something like Ruby Sparks, which is not a movie that I think succeeds, but I think comes so much closer to succeeding than I thought it would and is so much more than the movie I thought I was getting when I saw the trailer. Maybe this is just the story of
a recurring
theme. A summer of terrible trailers more than anything. But something mid-level like Hysteria, which I was like, it's not a great movie. It's not going to be something that I'm going to remember 2012 as being like the year that Hysteria happened, but I really enjoyed myself while I was watching that. Mm-hmm. I don't know, there was a lot of stuff that was like that. 5-Year Engagement I thought was like that. Safety Not Guaranteed I thought was like that. Yeah, I thought it was a really solid summer.
Yeah, I did too, and the reason why I emphatically believe that to be true is I missed a lot of things that I thought sounded really interesting as well.
Uh-huh.
And yet, despite the fact that I missed like at least a dozen things that I think people were really excited about or interested in, I still had all these things to choose from when I was, you know, trying to come up with things that I thought were memorable about the summer. So yeah, it's been a good start to the year. I think the first little half of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel like there are a lot of movies that I really liked, even if they're not going to be top 10 movies. But Derek always like ribs me because every time he's like, I feel like watching a comedy, we quickly determine that I don't own any. And, you know, there's like three.
You hate laughter.
I hate laughter and freedom. But I think 21 Jump Street is so unbelievably funny. Think Like a Man twice yesterday because I thought it's like problematic in certain ways, but it's, I think really the cast is really, has great timing and they're really funny. I think Wanderlust is really funny. I thought Mirror Mirror was surprisingly charming and funny and a movie for 13-year-old girls that actually seemed exactly right for them.
Yeah.
And apparently for me, but we don't have to, you know, connect that dot totally. And there was, and Ted, I thought was also incredibly funny. I laughed constantly through that movie and thought it was a lot better at making sort of male immaturity something to be a premise for a comedy, but also kind of do some things with in a way that when you just throw a bunch of Hangover guys together, nothing ever sort of happens with the, the relationships or the idea. But I thought Ted was really inventive, and he was a great character.
Yeah. Okay, so my parting question, to take us away from the summer so that we can move on.
Yes.
What...
Hope and change. Okay.
Right. What old movie did you see for the first time this summer that you just thought was the greatest?
Mine is called Sorcerer, and it's from all the William Friedkin movie watching that I was doing, and it's the movie that he made right after French Connection and Exorcist, when he could basically do anything he wanted. And it sort of was his Apocalypse Now in terms of like taking 4 years and it was supposed to take a year and a half. And it's a remake of The Wages of Fear, this French suspense movie about having to drive incredibly sensitive dynamite over the Alps in France. He resets it in South America. So it's like Fitzcarraldo as an action movie. Sort of. There's that's the sell line right there. But it's this
very bankable sell line.
Totally bankable. But it's unbelievably tense and exciting, and like the way of seeing sort of like a Hollywood image of like a third world setting. It's not sort of like blood diamondy and glossy and just about saying something, but but it's they do really interesting things with that. It was, I was watching it on the subway on my laptop, and I kept screaming and sort of clenching my teeth and being scared and covering my face. And I was the freak on the subway train, but it was worth it. It was totally worth it.
That's me every time I read a book on the subway, honestly.
Yeah. And he's in this huge fight right now because both Paramount and Universal are both claiming ownership and denying ownership of the movie, which means no one's been allowed to show it for years, but it's clearly his best movie. And really,
mine is, and this was a movie that I saw probably 80% of because it was one of those ones that was on HBO or Showtime in the morning as I was like getting ready to go to work, and I got sucked into it, and I was actually like an hour late for work that day. it was Hush, Hush, Sweet Charlotte, which I had never seen before, with Bette Davis and Olivia de Havilland, and
yeah, it's sort of one of those movies inspired by the success of whatever happened to Baby Jane.
Right. Yeah, it was, I think it was right around that time. It was 1964. Yeah. And in who I had to look up to see who this other third lead was, Agnes Moorehead, who was Oscar nominated for this, who I was just like, of course she was, because it's the most incredibly over-the-top thing I've ever seen in my entire life. The three of them, actually.
What? Like, Agnes Moorehead over-the-top? What are you talking about?
The fact that Bette Davis is the most demure of the three of them in the movie is maybe my favorite thing about it. Because not only is it Bette Davis, but she's the crazy one. Like, she's the one who's being driven crazy by this whole gaslighting thing. It's so... It's one of those... It's exactly the type of movie that you think it is from the title. And I don't know. I just sort of... It's one of those things you can just sort of, like, roll around it and just be like, weren't the 60s incredibly insane and fun?
There's no way to be ready for Agnes Moorehead. It's like...
Oh, my God!
Fiona Shaw and the Black Dahlia.
It's exactly... It's just...
That. Yeah.
It's so, I wanted to just have a reel of just her scenes, like, over and over and over again. And, like, and fuck whoever won the Oscar that year, because, goddammit, like, who wouldn't vote for this woman? She was so, so fantastic.
Well, mine, you probably have already guessed, because Nick shamed me publicly on my site, because I was trying to hide that I had never seen Dog Day Afternoon.
Oh,
but
wow.
You said it before. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
There are so many classic movies.
You can't put yourself back in the closet after you've come out.
Right? I know. So, you know, I had never seen it, and one thing that I find really interesting about, and this is going to be, I don't want to limit, like, the conversation, but one thing I find very interesting about writing about great movies is that the greater a movie is, the more hard it is to narrow down like what to even say to begin with, I think.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I wrote the piece for Hit Me With Your Best Shot on Dog Day Afternoon, and it was like just scratching the surface of like the 10 other things I thought I should maybe write about in, you know, in relation to the movie. And I think for a long time I just really resisted a lot of the early Al Pacino stuff. Because I grew up with him not being that actor.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
and him being sort of the calcification of that actor, and I thought he was revelatory. I literally think it's one of the best performances I've ever seen.
Yes.
It's my favorite Pacino performance for sure. I only saw it recently, maybe like 6 years ago or something like that. I don't know, the whole movie seems both of its time and yet way more fresh than anything, almost anything you're going to get today. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. The stuff, it's almost, watching gay content out of its time is never not going to be fascinating. And I like it for how divergent it is from now. And because you can sort of like unpack from it what was true and what was sort of not true of the time. And this feels like a lot more, I don't know, kind of both raw and yet totally this total sort of artifice of this idea of Chris Sarandon, you know, saving up for his transsexual operation, which always makes me think of like fucking Billy Crystal in Soap or whatever. But like it's
contemporaries.
But the way it's handled also seems so out of time, because it was like you have like how many things dealt with the emotions of it in a way that respected its characters like that back then. You know what I mean? Like
I was pretty blown away by it.
Yeah.
I teach it a lot, and so I'm so happy that almost every time I watch it, I immediately get to talk to like 20 people about it. And their reactions are always really various, and they usually haven't, like, they kind of maybe know about the Attica scene, maybe, but they
sure.
don't know anything else that's coming, and so they're always surprised by what the movie is set up to surprise you with an hour into, and talk about all the implications. I could watch that movie over and over and over again.
Since you teach it.
That's true. And if I ever finish my favorites countdown, it's way up there. Can I ask one more question before we go? That's long.
Yeah.
So if we're moving on from the present and whatever, since the fall and the winter seem so full of weird ass movies that could go either way.
Yeah.
Like,
more so than usual, I feel like.
Yeah, like crazy, risky, crazy projects. Crazy, crazy projects. But what are you actually super excited about?
I just once again today saw the trailer for Anna Karenina. And every time I see that trailer, this sort of goes hand in hand with Cloud Atlas, which are right now the two trailers I've basically watched every day for the last like 2 weeks. I'm so excited for them both, and I'm so worried about them both in almost like direct proportion. That the more excited I get about them, the more I find them so risky. Cloud Atlas probably more so than Anna Karenina.
Mm-hmm.
But I like that I know something is coming that is going to be that risky and that, I don't know, exciting. I think Anna Karenina seems to be, you have this really sort of traditional literary costume palace drama, and yet all the stuff with like the studio filming and the way everything is so blatantly artificial. Really looking forward to that. I think Joe Wright after Hannah really sort of this. I don't feel like this is a step backwards, even though it's sort of going back into like something more costumey and something more mannered and something more Keira Knightley-y. But I feel like he's going to take a lot of what I loved about Hannah in terms of
Keira Knightley-y. That just rolls off the tongue, Joe.
Doesn't it though? I don't know. I'm really, really excited to see his progression into that. And Cloud Atlas could end up being the total mess that we all think it is, but I also feel like I'm eager to see something that's going to take that big of a bite out of anything. And even if it fails, I have a feeling it'll probably be a very interesting failure to watch.
Mm-hmm. And is there any of these big, crazy movies that you just can't care about?
It's more dread than can't care about. I mean, I feel like I'm already sort of placing myself in this sort of box outside of the way everybody's looking at The Master. And I feel like I can't quite ever feel totally a part of that. Although I'm certainly going to see it. I very well may enjoy it. But something like Django Unchained, where I'm like actually dreading the experience of watching it, which is strange because I've loved every Quentin Tarantino movie. But this one really, really freaks me out.
Yeah, you know what? It's so funny that you say that because that's exactly how I'm feeling about it.
Yeah.
And I really like his movies, except the exception being Death Proof. But I mean, I just generally really enjoy them, and
yeah,
you know, find there's all so much to think about and so much to react to, and I just I don't know why I just am not looking forward to it. I'm not sure why. But I you know, this question usually, like, I could, you know, most things like what are you anticipating, is it should be easy to answer, but I have to tell you, like, I don't have, like, you know how people love to call anybody who writes on the internet biased, like, oh, you knew you were gonna love that before you saw it, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, looking at what's coming, I feel very sort of blank about all of them, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, I've managed to, even Les Mis, I've managed to sort of, like, empty myself out about most of these movies.
Right.
Like, I'm curious about a lot of them, but I don't...
Yeah.
There's not any one thing that I'm just like, oh my god, I have to love it. It has to be perfect, you know?
I have no idea what... Lincoln, especially, seems like such a blank slate to me,
mm-hmm.
that I could... Honestly, I have no way of knowing, even whether I'm looking forward to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm honestly going to see it, obviously going to see it. But, like, I don't know if I'm dreading it, if I'm anticipating it, what I think I'm going to like about it, whatever. It's just... And there's a lot of movies like that, I feel like, this year.
Yeah, and then there's a lot of movies coming by directors that I really, really enjoy, but, like, the subject matter doesn't interest me just, like, by itself. So, like, I'm curious about whether or not I'll love it, like The Master or...
Zero Dark Thirty.
Or Zero Dark Thirty, for example.
Yeah.
Where, you know, I love Catherine Bigelow, but I'm just like, I don't know if I'm curious to see it even. But, of course, I will, but...
Right. But, yeah, no, I know what you mean.
So there's a lot of things like that. And I'm curious about, I know other people are not, but I'm very curious about Life of Pi.
Yeah, that's the one that really, I feel like, if there's going to be a big release that I end up not seeing, it, you know, at least for a while, maybe not if until quite later, it's probably Life of Pi.
Yeah.
But I just have no interest in it.
But I have to say, the one thing that I'm still super ecstatic to see that sort of would spoil, like, this whole thesis I just delivered about being blank about all of them got delayed, and that was Gravity.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Gatsby.
No, because I...
Yeah, Gravity's such a better answer. Yay!
No, because... Well, no, The Great Gatsby is my favorite novel of all time, and I just don't want to see a movie of it.
Wow, even Baz.
Yeah, I've never felt it should be filmed. Like, I don't...
Yeah,
I think the novel's, like, perfect. I love the novel so much, so I don't really understand the desire to film it.
Was
but,
Gravity ever 2012? I thought Gravity was
no,
always...
it was supposed to be 2012. Yeah,
huh?
Summer
and
then Christmas. It was
yeah. So everything about Gravity is just making me curious. Everything about it, but it's the only one I feel that way about, and it's for next year anyway. So.
You know what movie I think might be the surprise animated, whatever hit of the fall? Is I saw the trailer for Wreck-It Ralph the other day, and it seems like one of those, like, How to Train Your Dragon poised to sort of, you know, it's not the big Pixar release or whatever.
Right.
But, I don't know, there was something in it that felt like there was some care put into it beyond just, we're just going to throw all these video game characters that you recognize onto it. It seemed inventive even within its own premise.
Hmm.
Again, judging that from a trailer. But,
do you think it has a minimum of 5 songs?
Oh my god, category sweep.
No, I think that they left in that rule to make sure we don't get a all Sharon Burlesque lineup. I think it's still only two
well,
songs.
Well, we gotta get
a song
from Skyfall, right? Like,
oh Adele. God. Isn't it Adele?
I don't think it's been announced. It's been the rumor forever, but we haven't heard anything specifically. That, all of a sudden, that's the most excited I've been for a Bond movie in forever. And I think it's because the trailer makes it seem like it's all about Judi Dench.
Yeah, I know,
like,
which
Bond,
is amazing.
And that Bond is sort of a supporting character in, like, M's psychodrama. I really, like, that's what's making me excited to see them. And, of course, my eternal love, Benoit Shaw.
Yes.
Who you've been openly cheating on with Aaron Taylor.
I know!
So.
Aaron Taylor Wood Johnson. Yes, exactly. Yeah, whatever. They can fight for me.
They can.
I'm totally with you guys. Zero Dark Thirty is the one I'm unreservedly excited about, except when I forget it's happening. Like, there's nothing...
Yeah.
It's like, even more kind of ambiguous than Lincoln to me.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The Hobbit is what I wish was really not happening. Like, please just don't. And then, like,
and the fact that it's going to be three movies, I just can't.
Which, my God. I mean,
And let me love the Lord of the Rings in peace. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, don't sully that for me.
Which was not a series I thought necessarily was moving in the right direction as he edited with a sense of the world loves this. Like, they just kept getting longer and something, I don't know. Like, I thought the peak of that one was the first one, but I still love the whole trilogy. But we do not need to go there again.
For 9 hours.
And is it actually, I didn't know if this was a joke. Is the second movie actually called The Desolation of Smaug?
It absolutely is.
That's like...
It is also a joke, but it's also true. Yeah.
But it is true? Ah, that's amazing.
We found our new electric boogaloo. We found our new...
I totally
turn off the dark.
No, that's amazing.
Great. Yeah.
Turn off the dark. Turn off the Hobbit. Come on.
Also, if you told me that I'd be this much anticipating a Robert Zemeckis, Denzel Washington pairing going into the fall, I would not have believed you.
Mm-hmm.
But I find myself really, really fascinated by what Flight might be.
I sort of feel that way too.
It's just amazing.
And maybe because Robert Zemeckis is like one of the weirdest filmmakers for me, and that the reasons the world loves him are the reasons I do not like him.
Right.
But I do really like him, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I just don't like him for any of the reasons that he seems to be liked.
Right.
So,
except what we're saying is like Back to the Future.
What?
What we're saying is that we like Back to the Future. I'm really excited for Amour, too, which I realize is not, like, you know, packing them in or whatever. But, mm-hmm. In the same way that Hope Springs seems like a unicorn, like, just watching two 85-year-old actors who were geniuses or whatever age they are, and just hearing how Sony Pictures Classics, which seems to really like the throw six movies at them in the winter and then mm-hmm. see which one sticks, like, they really... have not been buying things and really seem ready to build their whole season around that movie. And I read something from Telluride today where the head of the distributor said, we think this is our cries and whispers. This is a,
in
every category. We're not going to do the sort of, you know, trawl for as many movies as possible.
Awesome.
So that's exciting and exciting that they're that into it.
Yeah, I guess I should say when it comes to the foreign ones, I am a little more curious, maybe because I don't have the sort of the weight of the media's constant, like, expectations about them.
Mm.
But, like, I really am desperate to see that Danish A Royal Affair, just everything I've read about it.
Oh, yeah.
And Rust and Bone, I'm very excited to see.
Yeah.
The Odiard. And, anyway, we could talk about this for hours, and obviously we've already been talking for a long time.
Yes. But we'll have to do this again.
No. Only one podcast a year.
That's all you get. Right. That's all we're budgeted for, you guys. Sorry.
We'll get together again when we're 80, and we'll talk about how...
We'll talk about
our... Exotic Marigold podcast.
Which I still haven't seen.
And we still... And we went through this whole thing about the summer and never once mentioned it. The only reference... It wasn't even a reference to that. Was Judi Dench's psychodrama in Skyfall,
which will be two DVDs you'll be allowed to buy as a set.
Everybody, I've got dibs on the Bond Exotic Marigold Hotel for my Skyfall review. So,
oh my God, that just gave me the horrible image of Dev Patel like running screaming through Skyfall, all like manic and. Mannered.
Oh dear. Well, now you have to live with that.
Yeah, stop saying Dev Patel. Let's just not do that.
All right, boys. Thank you so much for
joining us
again. And once again, I'm Nathaniel Rogers from The Film Experience, and I'm here with, I've been chatting with Joe Reed of Low Resolution.
Thank you.
And Nick Davis of Nick's Flick Picks.
Ta ta.
Bye.